Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, the Holy See signs a new agreement with the Cairo-based Arab League. The Vatican's top ecumenical spokesman travels to Vienna to discuss relations with the Orthodox world and the goal of eliminating malaria deaths by the year 2015. We hear how the UN is counting on support from churches and faith groups to achieve this ambitious target. Pope Benedict met here in the Vatican on Friday with the Secretary-General of the League of Arab States, Amr Moussa, to discuss the Israeli-Palestinian problem, as well as other conflicts affecting the Middle East region. Before the meeting, the head of the Arab League and the Vatican Secretary for Relations with States, or Foreign Minister, Archbishop Dominique Mamberti, had signed a memorandum of understanding between the Holy See and the Cairo-based organization. A note from the Vatican Press Office said the new agreement was intended to foster increased cooperation and promote peace and justice in the world. But to find out a little more, I spoke with the nuncio to Egypt and the Arab League, Archbishop Michael Fitzgerald.
Well, first of all, it's not the beginning of relations between the Holy See and the Arab League, or the Organization of Arab States. That goes back to not my immediate predecessor, but his immediate predecessor. So two nuncios ago, the relations were established with the Arab League. But this memorandum of understanding is a usual practice between the Arab League and different countries. And it increases the relations between the two parties. It lays down that there should be regular consultation, which I think will be very helpful.
Can you give us any specific details about areas, political or cultural areas, in which this understanding can be furthered and can be developed?
Well, it is in those two, actually, in political and cultural, that the memorandum of understanding speaks. Of course, there is the concern for peace in the world, peace in this particular region, and that both parties are trying to work for this peace and can exchange on that and can see what they can do to exchange views on the international situation and perhaps also take part. One of the things that is underlined is cooperation with the United Nations and the United Nations organizations. And on the cultural field, it's particularly with regard to dialogue of civilizations, cultural dialogue, and also religious dialogue. But these aspects will have to be developed now. I think that this memorandum of understanding provides us with a starting point for engaging in some joint activities, or at least surveying the field where we can make a difference.
That's also the kind of work you're doing there in Cairo as the Holy See's representative, isn't it? Can you tell us about anything that's going on or progress that you feel that's been made over recent years in this area?
Well, the work of the delegate to the Arab League is we attend meetings when they are held. We're there for the formal opening, but not for the actual meeting itself. And then we get a briefing afterwards as to what has happened. And I must say that Dr. Amr Moussa's cabinet, his chief of cabinet, is always very welcoming and is always encouraging, in fact, that we should take some initiatives. And they are looking for us, in fact, to start something, I think.
So, in fact, it's quite a high profile on the agenda of the Arab League at the moment. You're saying relations with the Holy See, but
well,
perhaps with the Catholic
Holy
Church
See
as a whole.
Well, the Holy See is one, and I'm very pleased that this has, that the memorandum has been signed, because it's been prepared for some time. We were just waiting for the right opportunity to have it signed. The Arab League has just had a meeting with the Latin American states in Doha, and they're having these periodic meetings. They will have another meeting with African states, and it's all a question of, I think, of sharing concern, sharing ideas, and that is really, and of course for us, it is the questions of peace, of human dignity, These are our concerns.
I imagine that the agenda during the Pope's meeting with Amr Moussa will have also focused on the Pope's upcoming visit to the Holy Land. Is there a lot of interest, as far as you know, within the Arab League headquarters there for this visit?
I'm sure that, that will have been part of the concern, yes. And of, you know, the way the statements of the Holy Father can contribute to pushing the agenda for peace, really, because it is something that needs to be adopted not only by the political leaders, but by the people themselves, I think. And this is, of course, the church, which goes beyond boundaries, has this wonderful mission of bringing about this atmosphere of conducive to peace.
These diplomatic initiatives, of course, run alongside initiatives of dialogue for the Council for Interreligious Dialogue. Do you think this can help a lot, the work that they're doing?
It's in a way, it's on a different level. The Council for Interreligious Dialogue has had relations more with religious institutions, both with Al-Azhar here in Egypt or on the level of international religious organizations, and haven't had so much with the political organizations such as the Arab League. We'll have to see. We don't want to, you know, repeat what is being done elsewhere, but there is a need for different people to be involved, and so this perhaps allows other people within the Catholic world who are engaged in dialogue, through cultural dialogue. I'm thinking of the University of the Mediterranean in Marseille or the Dominican Institute here in Cairo. These could perhaps make a very good contribution to forwarding this dialogue.
And my thanks there to Archbishop Michael Fitzgerald, the Holy See's representative to Egypt and the Cairo-based Arab League. The Vatican's top spokesman on relations with other Christian churches, Cardinal Walter Kasper, was in Vienna this week, where the church is marking its first ecumenical week. Organised by the Catholic Theology Faculty of Vienna University and the prestigious Pro Oriente Foundation, the initiative was aimed at strengthening ties and practical cooperation between the churches of East and West. Cardinal Kasper, who heads the Pontifical Council for Christian Unity, addressed a conference on dialogue between the Catholic and Orthodox worlds. I caught up with him just after the conference to hear his impressions of the meeting.
Pro Oriente is a foundation established by Cardinal Franz König. He was very famous because he made the first relations with the East Bloc, and he was very engaged in direct relations with the Eastern churches, as Orthodox and Oriental Orthodox churches. And it's a very famous foundation, which is very helpful for us because they made the first proposal how to overcome the Christological differences with the old Oriental churches. They had a formula which was then more or less taken over by the Pope and the different patriarchs. Now they made very profound studies about the origin and history of the so-called Uniate churches, also the Catholic Eastern churches. This was very helpful because there are different lectures between us and the Orthodox about them, and there was a great dispute about this. And this helped. Now they are starting many new things, they have many relations to Russia and all the Orthodox churches. And now they are starting the Syriac studies they made over this old Syrian Orthodox tradition, and so go now on the so-called Nestorian tradition, because the so-called Nestorian church in the Middle Ages was still China, Iran, China, and they now are interested to discover all these roots, the Christian roots in China, and the Chinese government is interested in it.
You were talking about the current state of relations between...
I was invited by them and by the Catholic Theological Faculty of Vienna, and I had a talk, a lecture last night about the dialogue between East and West. Well, I spoke a lot also about the history, because you cannot understand this relation without knowing a lot of history, and then the present status of this dialogue. But I spoke only a dialogue with the Orthodox, not about the old Oriental churches.
Is there anything currently going on there at the Institute that, in your view, marks a real sign of progress in some of these more difficult dialogues?
Well, with the Orthodox, we make real progress, because after the document of Ravenna, you know probably, we have prepared last year in Crete a paper about the role of the Bishop of Rome in the Universal Church in the first millennium. This was the primate in the first millennium. And this document will be presented now in October to the plenary session of our common International Theological Commission. This would be very important to what was the role of the Universal Church in the first millennium and what we can say together already today. This is one step very important. With the old Oriental churches, we finalized, as you know, and we issued also now a document about the nature, constitution, and mission of the church. This was for me a miracle to have a document with churches who are 1,500 years separated, and we have so much common ground. Nevertheless, it was also a miracle. So things are going good, but now the tension between Constantinople and Moscow is going on also, and this has negative repercussions on our dialogue. Here we cannot do so much. It's an inner Orthodox problem. We cannot interfere. We can ask only both sides, please find a compromise, find a solution. But more we cannot do. But nevertheless, we hope that Moscow comes back to the table of dialogue now in Cyprus when we have the next plenary.
Were you able to meet anybody from the Moscow Patriarchate there in Vienna?
In Vienna, no, in Vienna not, because the Russian Orthodox bishop was called to Moscow. He's the successor of Kirill in the Department for External Relations, Bishop Hilarion. So there's nobody at this moment. But of course, I met the new Patriarch on the occasion of his enthronement in Moscow.
Vienna is also marking an ecumenical week at the moment, I believe, isn't it? Is this particularly significant for these relations?
Yeah, well, Vienna already geographically is very close to the Eastern Europe states, and then from the very beginning, already under Paul VI, this Cardinal Franz König, Dieter Lopp is one of the bridge builders of our dialogue.
And my thanks there to Cardinal Walter Kasper, President of the Pontifical Council for the Promotion of Christian Unity. Mosquitoes may be a nuisance to many of us here in the West, but in developing countries, a bite from the malaria mosquito can still prove fatal, especially to very young children. It's estimated that one child dies from malaria every 30 seconds, and across the world, over 1 million lives are lost each year from this easily preventable disease. While malaria was eliminated from Europe and North America over half a century ago, now for the first time the experts say they are poised to win the fight against the disease, even in the worst affected countries of Africa or Asia. As part of its Millennium Development Goals, the United Nations has set itself the ambitious target of providing effective and affordable protection against and treatment for malaria for all people at risk by the year 2010, with the goal of eliminating malaria deaths altogether by 2015.
For many years, even decades, there have been disparate attempts to fight malaria. The Global Malaria Action Plan brings everybody together to work with one plan.
Ray Chambers is the United Nations Special Envoy for the fight against malaria. He told my colleague Charles Collins more about why it's crucial to step up efforts to eliminate this killer disease.
The disease is really prevalent, but without the global awareness that other diseases like HIV/AIDS has, approximately 350 million people each year contract malaria, 90% of whom are in sub-Saharan Africa. More than a million people die, again, mostly in sub-Saharan Africa, and 90% of the people who die are children under the age of five whose immune systems have not developed. Malaria accounts for 60% of outpatient visits in sub-Saharan African countries and 30% of inpatient. The cost to the sub-Saharan African continent is over $30 billion a year when you combine the healthcare costs. In some African countries, one out of four members of the workforce is absent each day due to malaria. And so the economic costs are significant. And it's been the principal killer of children under five. I've heard estimates that as many as 50 million children have died from malaria. And it's become a way of life. And all too often, people just accept it as a natural occurrence in life. And yet all those deaths are preventable.
Why, as a disease, is malaria so hard to fight?
Well, the disease is spread by a mosquito known as Anopheles gambia. It picks up the parasite when it bites an infected human and then carries that parasite to another human when she bites that second human. The parasite in sub-Saharan Africa is known as falciparum. It causes death. The other main parasite for malaria in the world, occurring mostly in Asia and South America, is known as vivax. It gets the person quite ill, but generally no fatalities. The parasite, the falciparum parasite and the vivax parasite, are very wily parasites. So 10 years ago, a medicine by the name of chloroquine was very effective treating malaria. Today it doesn't work at all because of the resistance that the parasite built up against chloroquine. And so the medicine of choice today is something called artemisinin combined therapy. So this is a very, very wily creature. And it's difficult to stop mosquitoes from breeding. I've heard it said that a mosquito can breed in water left in a horse's hoof print. So it's not just large, stagnant bodies of water where mosquitoes breed. It's very easy for the Anopheles mosquito to breed. Fortunately, the Anopheles mosquito doesn't bite until around 10 o'clock at night, is most voracious around 3 a.m., and by sunup no longer bites. So that's why the long-lasting insecticide-treated bed net is such an effective weapon. Two or three children, a child and adult, can sleep under a long-lasting net, which generally lasts 4 to 5 years. And so because the Anopheles mosquito only attacks at night, those who sleep under a net are quite protected. And it has the second-fold benefit that when the mosquito lands on the net, because the net is insecticide-treated, the mosquito dies, and that disrupts the whole Darwinian reproductive cycle, and in of itself has been very effective in certain places in Ethiopia, Rwanda, Eritrea. Malaria deaths have been brought to close to zero as a result of the utilization of these long-lasting insecticide-treated nets combined with the artemisinin combined therapy, and in certain cases, indoor residual spraying on the walls, ceiling, and the floors.
One of the key things is that people don't have the right information, and that's why they're not using malaria services when they are available.
Esther Tala is a pediatrician and manager of the Cameroon Coalition Against Malaria, which has been campaigning since 2007 to raise awareness of the disease and help people protect themselves by using insecticide-treated bed nets or effective combination drugs.
So we focused on getting information out to the people through journalists. They are the ones who are able to reach the wide masses through the radios, the TV and written press.
How successful do you think this campaign has been? I mean, can you give us an idea now how many people are still getting sick? How many children are still dying from malaria in the country today?
We still have a lot to do. Our report in Cameroon, regulated information, shows that out of 100 consultations, you will have about 45 to 50 that are due to malaria. Of 10 children aged under 5 dying, you will have up to 4 of them dying because of malaria. And general deaths in hospitals, out of 10 general deaths in hospitals, you will have 3 to 4 due to malaria. So malaria is still a huge, huge burden in our society.
When Pope Benedict visited Cameroon recently, members of Esther's organization met with him to present some of the insecticide-treated nets and were delighted to hear him speaking out about the church's role in tackling such health challenges on the African continent today.
We managed, with the help of our Cardinal, Christian Cardinal Toumi, to meet with the Pope on the day he was leaving. I think it was actually the last thing that he did before he got into his car to leave for the airport. We had these young children who presented long-lasting insecticide-treated bed nets to the Holy Father, and he took them along. And we were very happy to hear him talk about the fight against HIV/AIDS, malaria, tuberculosis. So each time he talked about disease, fighting against the diseases to the rest of the population, to the leaders of the country, and to the bishops. He did talk about malaria as well, and we're very happy.
Je pense aussi à tous les malades, et spécialement ici en Afrique, à ceux qui sont victimes de maladies comme le sida, le paludisme et la tuberculose.
Speaking to the sick and healthcare workers in Yaoundé and Cameroon, Pope Benedict encouraged the church to pursue the urgent task of fighting against diseases such as AIDS, malaria, and tuberculosis. UN Special Envoy Ray Chambers says the aim of the Global Rollback Malaria Plan is to bring all sectors of society together to combat this killer disease.
It was a plan that took quite a few years to develop, but really significant. It was actually developed under the Rollback Malaria Partnership, the umbrella partnership that is part of the World Health Organization, that is part of the United Nations. And for many years, even decades, there have been disparate attempts to fight malaria. The Global Malaria Action Plan brings everybody together to work with one plan, and it's a roadmap to take us to how we reach the Secretary General's call of universal coverage of all 700 million people in sub-Saharan Africa at risk of malaria by December 31st, 2010. And if that lofty goal is achieved, there's an accompanying prediction that we should be at near zero deaths by 2015, which is a remarkable achievement, unlike anything that's ever been done of this magnitude, where we can go from having lost 1 million people last year to aspiring, with a great deal of documented evidence and an overarching plan, where we would have close to zero deaths by 2015.
What role can religious communities play in the fight against malaria?
You know, one of the biggest challenges we appear to be having, Charles, is people using the nets, sleeping under them. And it varies from country to country, region to region, village to village. Some people complain that it's too hot to sleep under a net. Many people don't understand the benefit of the nets. And many people don't understand that it's the mosquito that causes malaria. You know, we've learned, I was in Nigeria 2 weeks ago and learned from a group of young mothers that they love the nets, not just because it protects them and their children from malaria, but one woman described it as paradise. It's enabled her to have the best night's sleep that she's had in her life because all the other insects and critters and irritants no longer bother her when she sleeps under the net. We've heard that some people use the net to catch fish. And what we're turning to the religious community across Africa is to ask them to try and get the local priest, the local minister, the local imam to ensure that everybody understands the benefits of the bed net in their parish, in their congregation, and make sure that everybody sleeps under a bed net every night. And we've been doing a lot of work in Nigeria because it's the largest malarious country in Africa. It accounts for almost 30% of all incidents of malaria, loses about 300,000 children a year to malaria. And I recently met with the Archbishop of Abuja, the Roman Catholic Archbishop, and he's gotten together with the Sultan of Sokoto, who's the senior most Islamic leader, and they've agreed to mobilize their entire networks of priests and imams and emirs to develop a plan to ensure that everybody sleeps under nets. And as a result, on World Malaria Day, which we're celebrating on April 24th in Washington, D.C., the Archbishop of Abuja, the Sultan of Sokoto, and many other religious leaders from Africa, as well as from the donor nations throughout the world, are coming together to make a commitment and a pledge to utilize what they consider to be potentially the most effective distribution network to ensure that everybody sleeps under a bed net. And we're really excited about tapping into, using the phrase, a distribution network that we've not really used before effectively in global health.
My thanks there to Ray Chambers, the UN Special Envoy on Malaria. And earlier you heard Esther Talla, manager of the Cameroon Coalition Against Malaria. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at the same time tomorrow if you can, or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudetur Jesus Christus.